What if people with type 1 diabetes had the power to manage their condition without pricking their finger, to know their glucose levels with just a glance at their phone? The ability to manage their condition, to customize alerts and alarms to help keep them in range, all this via a discreet wearable sensor, the Dexcom G6 Continuous Glucose Monitoring System. Visit Dexcom.com today. For a list of compatible smart devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G6 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
It's the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews in it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Mick Warner. With me again, Mark Robbo Robinson. Well, Robbo, 16 days out from round one, and the big rule that we're still talking about, this is the third podcast in a row we're talking about it, but there was a furor over the Oscar Allen Brennan Cox set shot, 50-metre penalty, the man on the mark rule. Is the AFL, and I suspect the answer is yes, going to cave in and give some flexibility to this rule before round one?
Cave in.
I think they will make it adjustments, and they have to make it adjustments. I'll stand by it that people just don't like the rule whatsoever. I'm absolutely in favour of the rule, which I've made it known to you, Mickey Boy, over the last couple of weeks. And what we saw on the weekend was the Brennan Cox situation, playing for Fremantle, standing on the mark. He turned his back, he walked back, and the umpire gave 50-metre penalty. That is a major glitch. I spoke to Steve Hocking yesterday. He did a Fox Footy Zoom meeting with all the staff at Fox Footy at midday. I spoke to him just before that, and he said they'll be looking at reviewing the footage of the weekend's matches just gone. They got 9 Amy Searish matches this weekend. They'll have a meeting with their analysis team next Monday, and again, absolutely 100% supportive of the new rule, but they'll have to discuss, I think, what will they do with inside 50 set shots, which is exactly what the Brennan Cox situation, that's how the Brennan Cox situation came about.
Yeah, all we want is common sense, Robbo, in football, and we understand the genesis of the rule, that we all want the game to open up. We all want scoring. We all want to see.
So you like the rule?
Of Do you congestion. Like the rule? I like the rule if it has some flexibility and some common sense attached to it, which is that the umpire, at his discretion, can be of the view, okay, 3 minutes to go, ball's hemmed in the back half, you deliberately pushed him towards the boundary, the man on the mark, so that's 50, I get it. Yes, I support that. The ridiculous situation, it wasn't just the Brennan Cox one, there was the one in the Essendon practice match where the player had no impact on the guy who took the set shot, if you remember the one. So if they can iron that out, yes. But a bit like the 18-metre goal square, you know, you've got to think about these things before you bring them in. But anyway, I'm not going to die on a ditch over it because I get the feeling that they will change it. It does bring
you
in
know,
something.
I think, they'll bring in something. What we don't want to see, Mick, we don't want to see a situation in a game of football like we saw on the weekend with Brennan Cox.
No, we don't.
Where a guy turns his back, takes one step, maybe another half step.
So no impact on the play at all.
And we get a 50-metre penalty. No, we don't want to see that. And I don't think the AFL wants to see that as well.
Good.
So yeah, look forward to seeing what they'll adjust this weekend, after this weekend.
Yeah, but I just want to ask you a bit of deeper into this, and it might bore some people, but not me. We had a rules committee for many years where you had people like Lee Matthews and Kevin Bartlett and great football minds who would process what a rule looked like before it ultimately was ticked off by the commission. Then we had that was scrapped and we got a competition committee. And then we seem to be having rules that are being made up by not the competition committee, but the football operations department. It seems messy to me. I'm not sure the competition committee has been successful, certainly in terms of rulemaking. Do we need to go back to the drawing board? I say yes, and have a rules committee re-established.
I don't know what you call it, the rules committee. The rules committee...
Well, just some transparency in how rules are made.
The transparency, I agree with. The rules committee is interesting. You speak to people on the rules committee and say they suggest rules and the AFL wouldn't listen to them. And so the rules committee got disbanded for the competition committee. I asked Steve Hocking on Tuesday, actually, on Monday, actually, in fact, who came up with this idea. And he didn't answer. It was just a conglomeration of ideas between the executive and their analysis team and the competition committee. I don't know what the future holds for the competition committee. I really don't. I like the problem
it
is,
hasn't really worked, has it? It was decision making by consensus, and that's not how you make good decisions with 40 people in a room. We need to get back to smaller decision making bodies, and we need to know who that decision making body is. But as you say, hopefully they fix a rule and we can get on with the footy when we get some goals.
But see, that's Steve Hocking's. That's his modus operandi for how he leads. It's he consults a lot of people, and then makes that decision. Whether you agree with that or not, that's what he does.
Robbo, let's move on. I want to talk to you about your huge story on Saturday's front page of the Herald Sun, the Joel Wilkinson photographs that had emerged incredibly 8 years after they were taken. First of all, tell us about the story, but then I want to know a few unanswered questions. Why did the AFL feel the need to put lawyers on to Joel Wilkinson and not just simply apologise for what clearly was an unacceptable Wacky Wednesday dress-up day?
Well, it's a really good question. So the incident happened in 2013. The AFL is aware of the photographs in 2018 when Joel Wilkinson took his case to the Human Rights Commission. They responded with an email from Peter Gordon, the AFL appointed lawyer who was then chairman of the Western Bulldogs and one of the clubs that Joel Wilkinson was suing. It is a surprise. So the AFL wouldn't have apologised if Wilkinson didn't do the interview with the Herald Sun. It begs the question, would the AFL and the Suns apologised 8 years after the event? It's really odd. It's really odd behaviour. I asked the AFL, why did it take them so long? Why didn't they react when they first saw the photographs? And they basically said to me that there was a privacy and legal issues because it was still before the Human Rights Commission. And I said, well, when he abandoned the case in 2019, why didn't the AFL come out and say, right, we are aware of this happening in 2013. We're very disappointed. We apologise for that. But no, they didn't do that either. They waited until I interviewed Wilkinson, and we put it to them what their response would be. And that's when they issued the apology, as did the Suns, as did Lee Osborne, who dressed as Joel Wilkinson in the black face, and as did Alex Sexton. So, yeah, it's a bit winding, and people might not care about it, but Joel Wilkinson certainly cares about it. And the fact it took him 8 years to apologise is quite amazing.
So who knew what and when is what I'm interested in here. So the AFL are saying that they didn't know about it till 2018, but clearly the Gold Coast Suns, which is effectively the AFL because we know that they're run by the AFL, they're not like the other 16 clubs, apart from the Giants. Obviously the Suns knew about it. What did they do at the time about this?
Well, the Suns said they didn't know about it. That's what they said.
There's a photo in the middle of Metricon Stadium of all their players.
Yeah, that happened. Did it? That happened at the stadium. I spoke to senior figures at the Suns who said to me that they asked every person who was still at the club in 2021 who were there in 2013 where they were of this incident, and no one at the club said yep. I knew about that. No one. Now, the chief executive at the time was Travis Old, who's now on the executive of the AFL. Joel said he told the Suns, but as we sit here right now, No one knows anything about it, Mick.
Mm. Well, there's still a lot of unanswered questions there, and I how is Joel? More importantly, like, you know, does he? You dealt with him on the story. Is he feeling a sense of vindication, or that it's been put to bed?
No, Joel wouldn't think it's been put to bed. I don't think he's pretty upset. He's pretty upset about what took place then, that on that day, over his career. But he dropped his Human Rights Commission lawsuit. So I don't know what next step is for Joel. I don't know what other Indigenous people around the country think of this situation. But on the surface, it stinks a little bit. It really does. You know, 8 years for an apology, everyone just move on.
But not only that, you remember how angry the AFL were when anyone dared report about what Wilkinson was saying at the time. I think it stinks. And the word I'm thinking is traumatised. And I've interviewed Andrew Cracker this week about the same subject. And, you know, what I discover in interviewing these guys is how traumatic it is for them to talk about this, and to it actually brings up the old wounds for them. And when you had people like Andrew Demetriou on your mate Jared Waitley's show recently saying that Do Better report lacked detail, at least these guys, in being brave enough to talk out, are actually providing some of that detail about what they've experienced. And you just you'd have to be a bigot to be critical of these people for having the guts to talk out about what they experienced in their own footy clubs.
Now, mate, these guys, and we've spoken to them, and Andrew Cracker and Joel Wilkinson, and before that, many years ago, Michael Long and Nicky Winmar, they've got to be applauded for having the courage to speak out, because it's not easy for them. And, you know, your piece with Andrew Cracker, I mean, he went into great detail, and, you know, reading it, you feel embarrassed. You feel the hurt for Andrew Cracker. Could you feel that when you were talking to him?
Oh, absolutely. Like, the pain of bringing up something that, you know, and he said how much he regretted that he didn't stand up at the time for Adam Goods and Lumumba when Maguire said that stuff in 2013, you know, comparing Goods to King Kong. The pain eats away at him. So, yeah, I the one solace I have in this is that you hear younger players like Darcy Moore at Collingwood, this next generation of people coming through, they're not going to put up with that crap. And I think that...
What do you say to people, Mick, who, and people have said it to me since Joel Wilkinson spoke, oh, it's in the past. You've got to move on, you know. They've apologised. Let's just move on. What do you say to those people?
I don't say anything to them, but I know they're in an increasing minority. And as I said, they're bigots. Just open your mind and accept that unacceptable things were said and done. And like I say, I'm confident that the next generation of Australians – more decent, certainly in this space, than the last. And good on these guys for talking out.
Yeah, no, I agree. But the problem is, you know, I just feel it won't be the last time, mate. It won't be the last time. And then do you think the AFL is doing enough in trying to stamp it out?
Robbo, the AFL doesn't have a reconciliation action plan. It makes a lot of noises, but in the doing, no, in my opinion. But people say I'm an AFL basher, but just look at the facts. A reconciliation action plan is your organisation's commitment to be more inclusive of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, and they haven't had one for 4 years. And I read also in The Age over the weekend that NIDS, the Indigenous Radio Service, again, struggling for funding. We've been through this before. So the answer for me is no. What do you say?
Well, the AFL do talk up a big, a big match for themselves when it comes to, you know, stamping out racism. You know, the Adam Good stuff. They were just so slow to act on that, and even last year with the injections for the Indigenous players ahead of the hubs in Queensland, and they finally put out an apology or an explanation.
In the end, it was an apology, but, you know, there's always a but. And to your story with Wilkinson, you don't put attack dogs onto people and you don't put lawyers onto people. You just say sorry and you learn from it. But let's move on, Robbo. The footy is getting closer. There's some news that Ralphie was reporting that hopefully we might get to 75% crowd capacity. There's a decision. There's an anniversary date on March 13, which would be 28 days. God help us without a coronavirus community transmission in Melbourne. Now, 75%, we'd be cooking with gas then, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, let's hope so. And as I said, it's 3 weeks away, so a lot can happen in that 3 weeks to really hurt football, but a lot can happen in really supporting football. I mean, it'd be fantastic. Well, it's up to the government and the health authorities to decide whether we're going to go to 75% capacity. We can't say much except fingers crossed, because God knows we need football back, and we need crowds back, and we need as many people as we can at a game of football. And that's why I'm supportive of Essendon's move to move the game, their round one match between Essendon and Hawthorn from Marvel Stadium and the MCG, to get more people into the game. I hope the AFL agrees to that. The AFL owns Marvel Stadium, so there's going to be some financial interest there to consider, but if we can get an extra 25,000, you know, if we go to 75% and we can get, you know, we can get 65,000 in the MCG, I can't see why the AFL would say no.
I think they're going to say that they are locked into their fixture, which sort of doesn't make much sense given last year they said that they'd be agile and move the fixture willy-nilly, but there is time. Hopefully this virus stays away, Robbo, and we can get some footy. Now, I want to get your opinion on the retirement of the great Bruce McAvaney, who, not just a footy caller, he's a member of Carl Lewis at the Olympics and horse racing. Now, he's not retiring from everything, but he is getting out of footy. Let's start with Bruce. You're going to miss him as a caller on Friday nights?
No, of course, like everyone, and I'm not, there's no point sort of slagging off an iconic person. Bruce was magical, mate. He was magical. He was able to turn commentating at a football game into an opera sometimes, with his ability to go high and low. I really enjoyed Bruce, and I've been lucky enough to meet him and be with him several times, and it really is. I know it's a cliche to say, you know, he's media royalty. He's top of the pops. He really is top of the pops. And, you know, he did all those other sports, but his ability to call football and seize the moment and just be able to express must be so hard for commentators. They've got a real skill set. Just to be able to nail that moment with not just the words, but the monotone, the highs and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, everyone was sort of saying, Bruce, you're too old. And that always happens when you get old. Oh, you're missing names, you're this, you're that. Bruce was a jet. He was an absolute jet. And I think footy will miss him. But, you know, footy moves on. You know, footy doesn't wait for anyone. This is the problem in footy.
Can I just say there, Robbo, that to me the art of a great commentator of radio or TV is the commentator who doesn't impose himself into the call. He doesn't make it about him. You know, I saw Jim Maxwell, the ABC cricket commentator, made a legend during the week. And he's just a voice that you grew up with. You trust him. He talks about what's happening on the field. He occasionally stray into some of the politics, but generally he loves the sport and he brings it into your lounge room. And Bruce did that. It was never about, you know, look, how good am I, or
No, he wasn't a grandstander, Bruce. He lent his ability to do all
the That's do what we want, book. Isn't it? We don't want to know how good the commentator is. We just want to know how good the game is. And that's the trick.
Are you having a dig?
I'm saying that whoever Channel 7 want to replace him with, we don't need an egomaniac. Who do you think Channel 7 should replace Bruce McAvaney with on Friday nights?
Now, I read Brian Taylor say that they won't be a replacement, but they will have to be a replacement body. I mean, we always say the captain of the commentary team, that was always Richie Beno was always the captain of the commentary team. And Bruce was the captain of the commentary team at Channel 7. I think they will go with Brayshaw and Taylor on the first night. Mm. That's who I think. They really like Hamish McLaughlin, and I like Hamish as a commentator. I think he's a really, really good host. I think he's an excellent host, Hamish. A better host than he's calling. But I think they'll go with Brayshaw and Taylor. You?
I think they should go with Anthony Hudson because he's the best caller.
But they can't go with Hutto because Hutto's at Fox Footy, mate.
I'm just saying that if you're asking me who the best callers are, I would go with Hudson, who leaves his ego in the locker where it belongs. But
are you saying that the other two I mentioned, Taylor and Brayshaw?
No, BT's already got the job and he brings the colour and movement and you can have one player like that. It's like having a wingman. You've got a defensive winger and you've got the attacking wingman. Am I digressing?
I wouldn't
put Brayshaw and Taylor together.
Unless BT's not going to change, so Brayshaw goes a little bit...
They'll need to go to the conservative route, won't they?
If he goes the conservative route...
It'll be Hamish.
I agree, maybe. I agree with Hutto. Hutto's outstanding, but...
He's contracted.
Hutto's captain of the commentary team at Fox Footy, mate. He's under contract.
And... Well, your mate Waitley would be eyeing it off too, I would think. He was linked to Channel 7.
Yeah, they made a play for him. It fell over. I don't know what really happened there. I haven't really spoken to Jared about that, but if you were in charge of this year to go, so you play at 2:21, who would you go for? Now, Hutto is there. Hutto's been at more clubs than Jack Nicklaus, actually.
He's been everywhere, Hutto.
I always say that.
You know what I hope is that you can learn how to sync 3AW commentary into the TV coverage so you can have Tim Lane and Beaver.
There's actually some people do that anyway when they watch the TV.
But it has a delay, like this podcast. Well,
you've got to just pause the TV and just get it round about. But
it reminds me how you watch. You know how you watch games sometimes and you put the handkerchief over the tissue box over the score at the bottom so you can't see the score.
Well, you've got to do that because what the AFL have done, and Fox has successfully done this, is they've got rid of games overlapping. So the tissue box has gone from covering the score in the bottom right hand corner back into the bathroom because I don't need it anymore because there's no overlapping. You tell me. Did that annoy you?
Absolutely, it does. But as you said, they fixed that up. Anyway, Rob, I think let's have one more topic. I was interested, we all did a deep dive on Hawthorn during the week and I interviewed Jeff, who said he sees shades of 2005-06 at Hawthorn in terms of a rebuild towards a premiership. But you guys, I think you spoke to Nick Riewoldt and Kingy, not that confident that Hawthorn are in that good a spot. Is that fair assessment?
I'm very, very fair assessment. I'm not confident whatsoever. I think I've got them in the bottom two on the ladder. No, not confident whatsoever. I mean, they're trying to develop their back line. I don't know who's going to kick their goals in the forward line. Jack Gunston won their BNF last year and he was their leading goal kicker and he's hurt. I got major concerns about the Hawks this year, but they're just coming down heavily, mate, from their three-peat. And should they have done more and traded out more players and got in more draft picks? You know, it's easy to say yes, and I'm probably going to answer yes. they should get more draft picks into the system. But Clarkson's still got 2 years to go. Be interesting to see what he thinks about where his future is at the end of the year. He said in an interview during the week, he said probably nothing will happen. We'll get to the end of the next 2 years and we'll decide if I'm the right man for Hawthorn, and Hawthorn doesn't want me. But the next 2 years is critical to decide whether Clarkson stays, because if they can get some draft picks in and he sees something building, why wouldn't he go again? It's interesting, Mick, just before you go...
He's a Hawthorn man, so why he wouldn't go anywhere else.
Yeah, I wonder what these coaches think about their standing in the game. And they've got to think that. Over summer, I caught up with someone down at Inverloch, and we're talking about Kevin Sheedy. And Kevin Sheedy arrived at Essendon, and he got Essendon up for three periods of success. Three.
Mm.
And that was 84, 85. And then he rebuilt the Baby Bombers 93. And then 7 years later, he won in 2000. Clarkson got there in 2004, built it up in 2008, and then he won the three-peat. Yep. Does he ride that third wave? I mean, we always compare coaches with premierships won. And sometimes we've got to dig a little bit deeper than that and say, right, where have they come from? What did they have to do to build a premiership team? And Clarkson's done it twice and was very successful with the second group. If he does it as the third group and people say, oh, Clarkson's a genius, you know, it's a bit of a throwaway line when you call a coach a genius, because a lot of coaches will tell you you're only as good as the players you've got playing for you. But if he can build again and get that third wave and get a premiership, say it's 2025, 26, and he's still there, I mean, if he could do that, Clarkson absolutely goes down as one of the best ever coaches.
Yeah, great points there. And what Kennett was saying when I interviewed him is that the silver lining of the footy department cost cuts, Savage, 9.7 down to 6.2, is that Clarko and all the senior coaches across the competition, I suspect, are all more hands-on. They're back on the tools. They're doing what they are paid to do and they love, and that's coaching, more one-on-one with the players, a bit more at training. So that could be a positive for someone like Clarkson, who became more of a manager than a coach, didn't he?
Yeah, but that's where footy was going. I mean, all the coaches were saying, oh, we're like managers now. We're overseeing so much. So I don't want to see people lose their jobs in footy. There's some really, really good people. But I'm with you. Will it bring back sort of older style coaching, which I'm sure it is? I mean, there was some footage. I saw a photo the other day of John Longmire carrying out or pushing out a trolley with the training gear. And I thought, well, yeah, you haven't done that for a while, I reckon, these senior coaches.
Well, that's a good result. That reminds me, do you remember last year when they were talking about the AFL, your mates at the competition committee, about scrapping half time and leaving the players on the ground?
No, oh, they were going to cut it from 20 minutes to 10.
Stay on the ground. I mean, honestly.
No, that was ridiculous. That was ridiculous as well.
Anyway, I digress. Robbo, good to chat to you this week. We'll see your top 50 in Wednesday's Herald Sun, and we'll chat next Tuesday.
Super.